Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Well, it's never dull. Manchester Derby disappointment blown away by a second-half comeback in impressive style against Tottenham. We'll dig into the ins and outs of that game on this week's Blue Moon podcast. Later in the show, we'll look back over some of the very worst decisions that City have been on the receiving end of as well after that offside that wasn't at Old Trafford. Plus, we'll hear the ESPN's VAR expert Dale Johnson, who can explain why the video assistant couldn't get involved. Wolves is on the horizon as they visit the Etihad on Sunday, so we'll look ahead to that with Matt Cooper from Talking Wolves as well. I'm David Mooney. I'm at the Etihad after City's match with Spurs, which means my guests will rotate throughout the show. For the first part, I'm joined by The Athletic's Sam Lee. Hiya, Sam.
Yeah, I'll get quite dizzy if I'm rotating, but little dad joke for you there. Yeah. Seems like that kind of night.
It is that kind of night. I mean, first off, unpick that.
Well, I mean, I was doing some stuff for Radio Manchester, so fortunately I've had a bit of time to kind of collect my thoughts. I was thinking, at half-time, City weren't great, but they weren't bad.
No, I thought they were all right, yeah.
It was never a 2-0 half-time scoreline kind of game, but it was just that thing of City were just kind of getting back into a bit of stride and momentum at Old Trafford, and obviously that all disappeared up in smoke. And then, you know, what Pep said, forget about that, focus on Spurs, and they've done that. And then if you come into that Spurs game, play all right,
and go 2-0 down,
and go 2-0 down for that, you think, when are they ever going to get started again? Obviously there would have been plenty of time, but you wouldn't like to be coming into training tomorrow morning for that kind of thing. And then that was like the worst possible scenario. Like, and if you lose, it can't be like that. But this is the best possible scenario. Like, yeah. To come back like that is going to do wonders for them. And when I'm talking about doing something for Radio Manchester, it's because this is all on record, what I've already said. So this isn't just me saying nice things because they won. But at half time, I was thinking, because obviously we've been concerned about the mentality. And everyone's talked about that Gundogan quote and what it means and how deep it runs and all that kind of stuff. And obviously Guardiola at the weekend said, look, there was no concern about that at United, but it's harder to see when you lose and all that kind of stuff. But I was thinking in the first half, they look, you know, they wouldn't be playing like this in terms of the commitment and the running and the effort if there was a concern about the mentality. And even you know, in the first half when it was 0-0, 2-0 didn't really change that. And then obviously it speaks for itself, doesn't it? But a 4-2 to come back and win it like that. And obviously, because the other thing is, at 3-2, obviously the crowd are up and the blood's pumping. You could be thinking, we need to go for this, clearly. As soon as they went 3-2 up, it was just short passes between them. Yeah, they had to slow it down.
Did you not get the sense there was about a 5-10 minute spell where it became a little bit end-to-end?
Well, was that Rico Lewis block that went off the outside of the post? That was at 2-2, was it?
2-2, yeah, I think.
I mean, again, it wasn't that City were terrible in the first half and brilliant in the second. They were better in the second half than the first, but they weren't bad in the first. But there were still a few ropey moments. That was obviously the most major one. There's a few times, I always hate it when you see fullbacks getting dragged over out wide to fill in for a fullback because you know another centre-back's coming across. It was basically like that Champions League final goal for Chelsea. You know, when Walker goes early, everyone shifts over. And here's the worst thing, because you go, Kane's in the middle now. And then if it misses Kane, Son's behind it. It's a nightmare situation. And that happened a couple of times. But I've not written it yet. But I'm going to write about bravery from this game because, I mean, Pep's lineup.
Well, I was going to come to this because, like,
it's a brave lineup. He doesn't care, but it's a brave lineup.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is that the headlines are no Foden, no De Bruyne, and that's obviously
arguably
what's
all the best players on the bench.
Yeah, and that's eye catching. And then the like you say, you put that lineup out. The first half performance was all right, not bad. And then you go in 2-0 down. Yeah. It's very, very easy to start going, well, should have played De Bruyne, should have played Foden.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, it's not really brave on his part because he doesn't care. He doesn't care. But he'd have been murdered for that. you know, if they had lost, regardless of a bit of bad luck second half and however the second half had panned out, he'd be murdered for that lineup. But it's just another thing he said after the game at United at the weekend. He said about United's threat, and he goes, the way to defend that is just to sit back. And after that, they can't run. There's nowhere to run. So where's your counter-attacking threat? He goes, but that's not what we do. We want to do it our way. You know, 40 metres behind, playing on the ball. But that's what they were doing at, when they were 2-1 down, at 2-all, at 3-2, 4-2. Well, not so much 4-2, actually. They brought on Diaz.
Yeah, quite late, yeah.
But fine. But all the way through, defending, so high up, with that threat, often 3-on-3, that is, again, you could say it's stupid. It's incredibly brave. And then you talk about the individuals. Rico Lewis, you tweeted about it during the game.
Incredible.
I mean, he got one pass in the first half, but wasn't a great pass. And also, he turned around and City weren't set. He didn't have, you know, Rodri 15 yards inside. He didn't have his usual options. But he took it, looked around, weighed up the situation, held on to it for a bit to a track mate, and then gave it to whoever he gave it to. He's thinking, he knows what he's doing this.
What spurred my tweet was the moment when he looked behind him and he had nothing but Edison behind him. And Son bearing down on him, and he went, yeah, all right, I'll just sidestep round him.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're 18.
Exactly. These are the kind of examples I'm talking about. There was one where Akanji went, the ball was kind of cleared, and he went to head it back to Edison, and it didn't go far enough. And Stones was running back to kind of sweep it up, and he had Kane. He could have easily given it back to Edison, and he kind of shimmied and wriggled out of it and came the other way. And I mean, he gave it back to Akanji, and he booted it, and it was a bit dodgy for a minute. But again, Stones there. And the biggest example of it, and Rodri now, which means we can talk about Rodri from the weekend, because Rodri was amazing at United. He was City's best player. His bravery, like, there was, I can't remember exactly what happened in the second half. I think it was 76th minute, that was it. It was bobbling around a bit. And you know that if you don't get it under control, they're just going to play the ball in behind for Kulusevski or Kane or Son, and you're in real trouble.
Yeah.
And it came to him. I think Grealish given it to him. And he just held on to it and held on to it and held on to it. Attracted three men, and I think he just gave it out to Mahrez. And with that, it was a dangerous situation. It's now fully in City's control, and obviously it's not in Spurs' control on the counter-attack. And just that, the amount of just bravery on the ball, bravery in what they've set out to do, in the circumstances of how they wanted to do it. Like, you can't fault it. And look, I don't know what's going to happen against Wolves. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But, maybe it's a statement that I'm getting carried away after the win, but to worry, I wouldn't be worrying about that Gundogan quote anymore. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
I know what you mean.
It would be, because I asked Pep after the derby. I was like, look, it's been up and down in recent weeks in terms of, he said they were alive against Chelsea. You think, okay, they're back at it now. And then they go to Southampton, they were shocking. And then they're back at it at United, back at it tonight. Is there another shock around the corner, or are they back at it? But you just think, they can't be lacking commitment to play like that. They just can't be.
Yeah, I mean, the other side of it, we me and you have talked a lot about control and controlling games.
I was saying it on the radio, and I was like, people are going to recoil at that word, aren't they?
Yeah. But how,
that's my legacy.
How controlled was that? Because in many ways, the performance was...
No, it wasn't, was it really?
It wasn't, but in many ways, it was... Like, people have been calling for the chaos to come back and that sort of... And I kind of wondered if that's what you get.
Well, I mean...
If that's how this team is chaotic.
Well, the thing is, you couldn't really blame the fact, if it was chaotic, you couldn't blame the fact they went 2-0 down on that. It was just poor mistakes. And then I could see as well, once it went to 3-2, they're the people who really hate this kind of slower game. And City started playing it around. Obviously, if Spurs had then equalised on the counter-attack, which is one of the things they were trying to avoid, they'd be like, well, this is what you get when you slow it down. We should have done this and we'd be, you know, we scored three goals playing like this.
We had Spurs on the ropes, yeah.
But, I mean, there's nothing. I don't think there's anything more I can say other than, look, they didn't even lose control through their own kind of transitions or whatever. It was just a mistake, wasn't it? That one.
Edison made a mistake.
And then I suppose the other thing is,
Rodri could get it out for a corner, I guess
the other thing is conceding a second goal straight after. It's a bit like Pep said after Old Trafford, after talking about the refereeing decision. He said, look, but the biggest issue is if you concede, you can't concede 2 minutes later. But I looked at it, there was nothing majorly wrong. It just unfolded badly. But they didn't do anything stupid like Edison booting the ball down the pitch. I need to see again tonight what happened. But there was some poor situations.
I do think Rodri
that tackle in the box. Never want to get him out. Just win, to be stronger there. You know, I mean, it's a bit Yadar analysis there. But just be stronger there. That's all you need to do. Like, he's a strong player. He knows what to do. But I guess sometimes in those situations, they've got one eye on winning the ball, the second eye on what they're doing next. Good example of that is Mahrez.
Yeah.
Because when Rodri sprayed that pass out to him, was it Ben Davis at that point went in to win the tackle? Mahrez actually, he didn't just like win the tackle and never mind where the ball goes. It was kind of controlled it. They've always got one eye. It's not where they don't generally, if they've got a ball to clear on the edge of the box, they don't generally hoof it. They'll always try and, a good example of this, is that Andros Townsend ridiculous volley for Palace a few years ago. And I remember somebody on TV criticised City because I think it was Gundogan just did a little flick header away.
Yeah, you can.
And they were like, "I'll just get rid of it." Yeah. But it's like they're trying to play on a counter attack here. Yeah. They're trying to keep this ball. They're not trying to lose it and get penned in.
It's how I concede everything on FIFA.
We're just trying to play out.
Yeah,
but maybe Rodri was thinking, "I'm just going to try and win this and flick it rather than I'm going to give them a corner," which I could understand. I thought it was a bit soft.
Again, this might be a bit Yadar, but last minute of the first half after you just conceded,
settled
for the corner.
Exactly, that was the thing. There was no real problem with what they did and how they did it at United, really. It was what they did was the right kind of stuff, but it just went badly. But that, like I said, I need to see it again. I need to see the decisions that went into it. But how you ended up running towards your own goal. It's like, yeah, you're obviously thinking, well, we shouldn't be 1-0 down here, so we're going to go and put this right. But you're right, it's just cooler heads. And again, Pep might even mention it. I don't know. Pep might mention it. You know, by the time people listen to this, we'll know. But it's that kind of thing, isn't it? Like you said at Old Trafford, he's always got the Champions League in his head. And if that happens again, then he's struggling.
Yeah.
But again, with all of that going through their minds at half time to come out and play like they did second half.
I mean, the first 20 minutes of the second half, I mean, the phrase, again, that I've written down is a brilliant solution to a problem that should probably have never existed in the first place.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's almost, and again, because we were talking about control a minute ago, and maybe we drifted away from that, but it's almost like you got no choice there. Like, you've got to play with that intensity because you've got no other option. Like, if you don't do it, then you're going home and you're getting beat. So it's difficult to kind of manufacture that tension. Obviously, in the first half, you can play more direct because I think that's what they were doing. It wasn't like massively long ball, but they were more direct.
I mean, there was one moment I spotted it actually. Stones looked for Haaland over
in
the
behind.
Top, in behind,
yeah, yeah.
And Guardiola gave him the most enthusiastic round of applause that I've seen.
Well, funnily enough,
and I thought that was. I just thought back to the start of the season, that Palace game.
That was the one note I made in my phone. Apart from all the bravery examples that I've decided I was going to do later, because I was thinking they're more direct here, and what they did, because that got cut out. But Gundogan won the second ball, and then he played the ball out wide to Grealish. Grealish put the ball into the box fairly early. That got headed away, and Rodri won the second ball on the edge of the box and had a shot on it. I think it went out for a corner. And you think this is more direct second balls. It's not how they like to do it.
Yeah.
But they've obviously seen something tonight for whatever reason. Maybe, you know, embracing the fact that Spurs are going to be open, the fact that they've got Haaland, the fact that they've got Alvarez, and you know, maybe it does come down to a little bit of Pep thinking. You know, we need a bit more of this. We've not had enough of this, so we're going to do it. Again, it comes back to the lineup. I saw it before it came out, and I was like, "This is going to cause mayhem." And I was like, "I don't really get it." But then, with the benefit of speaking about it on the radio, I was thinking about the press conferences I've sat in and Pep saying, you know, yesterday they've not had enough runners through the middle recently. It's just been Haaland on his own, and when it's like that, you know, nothing's going to happen. And so all of a sudden you've got Alvarez in there, you've got Gundogan in there off the ball, you've got Grealish and Mahrez in terms of off the ball, and they're pressing. Part of the reason they play a lot is because they're just defensively, if they lose it, they go and win it back, you know. But you might not have them down as City's best pressers, or even necessarily, you know, Mahrez tracking all the way back maybe, but in terms of that intensity and winning it, they're really good. Pep loves them for that. Alvarez is pressing, nobody needs to talk about. So you've got that off the ball as well. And then on the ball, in terms of the build-up, and off it as well. So many men in the middle. With Lewis, you know Lewis is going to come inside, although he did actually go outside second half as well. You know he's going to come inside, and if he goes outside, Ake can stay in there. You've got the two centre-backs as well. You've got Rodri. Gundogan's obviously going to stay deep while the ball's deep, and then he'll progress.
Then forward,
you've got so many options in the middle. It was like I was saying on our Athletic podcast, I can't really rely on us having the same audience, but the Chelsea lineup at Stamford Bridge, which everyone kind of hated, Pep acknowledged was wrong and changed at half time. I said I liked the intention behind
the idea
it.
There was a lot to like.
There was with, you know, they had Foden playing, they had Cancelo on the right, so maybe not everyone wants Cancelo on the right wing, but they had width on that side, you still had Haaland, you've got the four best midfielders all on the pitch at the same time. You've got loads of cover in terms of Walker and Ake at the back, you know, obviously Walker's very quick, Ake's fairly quick. There's a lot of stuff to like there. It didn't quite work, but tonight, the more I thought about it, in that an hour and 15 minutes before kickoff, I was like, I kind of see
what he's after.
He's after those runners in the middle. He's after that intensity off the ball. He's got plenty of men to kind of, in theory, stop counter attacks through the middle. And again, I don't think it's brave on his part because he doesn't care what people say. But if you look at that, those nine players on the bench. Again, I said this on the radio, but put those nine players in a team and made them play against like 11 Premier League opponents over a season,
probably
they wouldn't get. I mean, it would be very, very difficult. We saw how difficult it was when City played Fulham
with 10.
Very difficult. But I don't think they get relegated. Like, there's a hell of a lot of quality in that team.
Yeah.
That was just on the bench. Again, the other thing about Pep picking the team that he did, all of those players on the bench, okay, on paper, they could do that. But at the moment, none of them could really put their hands up and say, I deserve to be playing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a quick word on Mahrez. Because...
Unbelievable.
I mean, I was going to say, what, second half? But like, the whole game, he was fantastic.
Yeah. Again, we just talked about the players who don't deserve to be playing. And there's been, obviously, the main issue since the World Cup is just the amount of players who've been off form. But he's been one of the better ones. Okay, he didn't have a great game at United at the weekend, but he's obviously been one of the better ones. I'm overanalyzing everything. I was thinking people didn't really like how he played against Liverpool in the Carabao Cup. He's got a great goal. Okay, it wasn't great otherwise. But he has been... It's funny because, do you remember earlier in the season, it was like, this must be his last chance now.
Because he kept getting...
And then he was rubbish. Yeah. And then he still played. And you think... I mean, and obviously we look back at it now and it's because, you know, the control and slowing the game down. He's the only person on that right wing, other than Bernardo, obviously, I guess. He could do that, so obviously Pep stuck with him. But now, like even before tonight, like why would you not play him anyway?
Yeah.
Like we said this again on our podcast before the derby. Because there was loads of uncertainty after Southampton, was there? But obviously Mahrez is going to have to play, or even not, we don't know if he will or not, because it's Pep. But you'd think he'd have to.
Yeah.
Fully on merit. And then tonight, unbelievable. Like, I could say that first touch was a tackle. Normally that's normally a diss. But he had to tackle the guy and control it in the same action. And then, I mean, you can maybe moan at Lloris at the near post, but that was fantastic. And then...
Took a little nick as well.
The one at the end.
Right foot from him as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he had a shot that went just wide from the edge of the box on his right foot beforehand. Again, look, if that shot hadn't gone in, we'd probably be saying, why is he shooting on his right foot and all that? But fickle that we are. And then the one at the end, as he went through, because you knew the dink was on.
Yeah.
I just remember the Liverpool game last season.
Don't chip it over, for the love of God, don't chip it
because,
over.
Because, I mean, to be fair, even at 4-2, I was like, I'm a bit concerned about Kane and Son and Kulusevski. But 3-2, when he went through, there was certainly enough time to think about it. And I thought, just don't do that again. But brilliantly taken. And just even to make that run at that point
in the
game.
And Edison to spot it as well.
Well, again, I tell you what, I've not even mentioned it. I've not even made a note of it, but I will do in the article. Talk about bravery again. He dropped two big eggs in the first half there. Didn't put a foot wrong second half. In terms of the distribution, to keep going and picking out the men and the passes he needs to make. Because if he starts suffering mentally and thinking, I should play that, but I'm not going to, the whole game plan's going to fall in like a house of cards. And he kept at it. And again, I mean, I'd have to try and find out what the dressing room was like. I was thinking at half-time, actually. I'd love to see a documentary camera. Of what was they saying at half-time? Because you'll have all the subs going, come on, guys, come on. Because like, they didn't really deserve to be low and down. But full time, there'll be some partying tonight. How far away is the Wolves game? Because I'm trying to work out if they'll be out in town.
Sunday 2 o'clock. It's quite
probably,
soon.
Probably can't go out tonight. I'm sure a few of them will manage it.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Another quick word. I mean, we've mentioned him already, Rico Lewis. But what a performance. I mean, there was a moment in the second half where he absolutely bollocked. I think it was a Kanji for not giving him the ball because he had so much space on the right-hand side.
Yeah,
and he was just like, mate, you're an 18-year-old lad who's playing your fifth game.
Yeah. I mean, the kind of subtext of this is we need to talk about Kanji on the ball at some point.
Yeah.
It's not great. But that is unbelievable. I didn't even spot that. And like I said, I've already talked about all the stuff that really impressed me. And then when he went down with cramp, normally when you see players get cramp, you think, well, they're wasting time.
Yeah. But
it's like, you know, I don't know why this example came to my head, but Champions League final win, it was Liverpool and AC Milan. Carragher got cramp, I think, in like extra time. And I was like, yeah, fine. I'll get that. You know, I completely
you're
get
allowed,
it. But normally I'm like, all right, they're obviously just wasting time. But when he went down after like 81 minutes, I was like, this is a kick.
Yeah.
He's played a hell of a game. And also, I think the thing that impresses people around him and around City he's getting lumped. Like when he played against Liverpool and when he played against Leeds, he just gets kicked all
the time.
And it's like, I don't know if it was, I think in those games it was kind of intentional. It's like, this is the kid, you know, you've got to, it's just the unwritten rule of football, isn't it? You've got to do it. Tonight it didn't seem so intentional, but he was still getting kicked about. He got stood on by Højbjerg, which was a mistake, but he still got stood on. It's going to hurt. Højbjerg's a big old fella. You wouldn't want to be going up against him. Like, again, just thinking about my own mental weakness as a footballer.
I don't want to get clattered by one of these lads.
Yeah, but you know, I was actually, I don't know why I'm even saying this, but again, when we were at Leeds, I was talking to a colleague, and because I'd done a bit of radio with Michael Brown.
Nameless, I like it.
Yeah, but I just went, I just remembered how horrible Michael Brown was as a player. Like, just, and I just went, one of the million reasons I was never a professional footballer is like, being in the tunnel, lining up against him, and go, I don't want to be anywhere near him. I don't want to be anywhere near him. And it's like, that's, Spurs are a big team. A few units in there.
Yeah.
I mean, it just adds extra layers to the praise that we're giving. I mean, all of them, but Rico Lewis, unbelievable.
Incredible. Final question for the first part of the show, Sam. Julian Alvarez playing off Erling Haaland. I thought he was great.
Yeah, he was. And the only thing you could maybe say, you know, we said all those people on the bench didn't really deserve to play. It wasn't like Alvarez and Gundogan were like, they've been amazing, bring them in. Because, you know, Alvarez had a couple of games and all right against Chelsea, poor against Southampton like everyone else. Gundogan's last game was Southampton. But yeah, the interesting thing is, earlier in the season, Pep was talking about playing those two together, Haaland and Alvarez, and he was kind of like, well, I like it. I've seen it a few times now, and I like how they work. But then he was asked about it after the Everton game when he threw them on, and he was like, it's good to have those two men in the box, but you need to build up better, and for that process you need different types of players. And it kind of led me to believe, and then the conversations I had last week about what's going on tactically, he was like, it's not something he really sees as an option, just because Alvarez is another kind of destabilising player like Haaland, who just wants to always go, but obviously what he's done tonight is he's just offset that. Because when I was speaking to a contact about, you know, Pep and his selections recently, he said in the Chelsea game and then the Southampton game as well, Foden in midfield, because even though he's one of these players that goes like De Bruyne, but he surrounded him with the players who slow the game down.
The players would hold it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, if you think about that balance tonight, they were still there. Because he had Haaland, then he had Alvarez. Everyone else was one of those slow the game down players. There wasn't even Cancelo. You know, Ake is not.
There was a moment where Ake was clean through, and you were like, never seen this before.
Was that when he had to play in Haaland? Yeah. It was just like, you could see him thinking, how am I going to play this pass? And then it was the worst pass ever, and then he went and got it back. But like, Rico Lewis coming inside, again, another player. Rodri, Gundogan, two, just pass, and obviously Grealish and Mahrez, which so much is said about them. But he's found a way to kind of go, okay, we can play these together, but, you know, don't expect it. Well, maybe, you never say never, but don't expect it with De Bruyne as well, and Foden as well. He found the right balance to do it there. And, you know, maybe that is the solution.
Maybe that's why he had to drop Foden and De Bruyne then, in this case.
It would have been, I think. You know, knowing how he picks those teams, if you are going to have two players like that in such close proximity, like, causing chaos, then you do need to offset it with others. That's how he sees it. But also, I suppose the other thing is, because Alvarez is that type of player, but also he can play, obviously, can't he?
Yeah.
Like, we've always said, stylistically, he's more suited to City than Haaland is, in terms of how he can drop deep and link up the play and all that kind of stuff. So he has got that, and off the ball, he's pressing as well. But yeah, he is still one of those chaos players, and in a Pep team, there's only so much room for
chaos,
that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you go 2-0 down and you get chaos anyway.
Yeah, may as well have a bit of chaos to
every week.
Yeah,
people will love it.
Not sure about that. We'll get more reaction from the Spurs game a bit later on in the show, but for now, the equaliser in the Manchester derby was a bit of a signet of a decision, with pretty much every reasonable person that I've spoken to agreeing that Marcus Rashford should probably have been ruled offside because he was interfering with play. Whether incorrect or technically correct within the laws of the game, realistically, that goal could stand was a bit of a nonsense. It got us thinking of the worst decisions that City have been on the receiving end of.
Hi, it's Adam from statcity.co.uk, and my most recent injustice in terms of City is the James Milner at Anfield, the one-man assault on Bernardo, Foden. You can pick and choose which example you use.
Hello, my name's Chris Higginbottom, regular contributor to the award-winning Blue Moon podcast. And when asked to pick the worst decision I can remember going against City, it was obviously not an easy choice selecting from a packed competitive field, but I've decided to go for the last derby match that I actually attended at the Death Star or Old Trafford, whatever.
Hiya, it's Kieran Murray here. I want to talk about the decision that was made in the Manchester derby at Old Trafford in 2009. City were 3-3 in injury time, where there were 4 minutes added. only for the clock to run on till 6 minutes, allowing United to score a fourth.
We'll start with the Bernardo one. He literally just body checks Bernardo. Bernardo ends up upside down, landing on his neck. Dangerous play. Milner was already walking a tightrope on a yellow there for earlier fouls on Foden that could easily have been red.
Taking an early lead, actually, through an exquisite Rosler chip over Peter Schmeichel, and you just had a feeling that we were going to upset the apple cart that day. And when it came, the penalty that I'm complaining about was so soft, so nonsensical, that literally everybody in the ground thought that it'd gone, well, they thought they'd been rightly given our way.
The fact that they won it in such a way where Martin Atkinson should have blown up, and seeing Ferguson dancing, Mark Hughes remonstrating with the fourth official and waving at his watch while the fourth official ignored him, then a couple of minutes later shared a laugh and a joke with the same official, just, oh my God.
It's Dom Farrell from Sporting News. I think if we're thinking about City goals that are bad decisions or correct decisions in line with silly rules in the modern game, you can't look much further than Fernando Llorente's goal that settled the Champions League quarter-final against Tottenham.
Liverpool go up the other end and score with Milner still on the pitch. It's those type of decisions that when they go against you, they can really affect the player's mentality, because obviously there's a perceived injustice, whether it's right or wrong. In this case, it was right. And then the heads go, the game plan goes out the window, and the referee has effectively ruined the game.
I watched it in a pub back home in Ireland. My sister and I were there, the only City supporters in the whole pub. This was a sucker punch that really, really, really hurt. And I remember giving my phone to my sister at full time, just knowing that there was going to be a slew of phone calls and text messages. I turned my phone off, gave it to my sister, and just said, will you hold on to that for me for a couple of hours while it calmed down a little bit.
Even Roy Keane, who should have been sent off by this point, not surprising, it was nearly half time, started berating the ref for giving City a free kick. Not because he thought it was wrong, but because it would have been the right decision, and that's just what Roy Keane did.
That was a goal that struck Llorente on the arm and went into the net. The season after, but this rule had already been written before that game to come in for the next season. Those goals were illegal. Accidental handballs were punished with a free kick straight away. So City fell foul of that.
Hi, I'm Richard Burns. I think the decision that I think of when I think of terrible decisions against City, a game at Millwall back in the Championship days.
Hi, I'm Dan Burke, and for me, one of the biggest refereeing injustices in the entire history of football is Danny Teato cruelly being denied the goal of his life when City played at Middlesbrough in the 2000-2001 season.
And then, of course, in the home game against Tottenham, good to have some good vibes about a game against Tottenham coming up. That same August, Gabriel Jesus thought he had a winning goal, but the ball brushed Emerick Laporte's arm, and City were the wrong side of that changed handball rule then. So, you have to wonder if Marcus Rashford will cause the offside rule to be changed, and how that'll continue to be something that's just hilarious or otherwise.
Michael Frontsec was the alleged aggressor in the incident, who wouldn't hurt a fly, by the way. Perhaps couldn't would be more accurate. But he went to get an explanation from the ref, and I've watched the footage back. He came away from that with the face of a man who just witnessed like a horrible accident.
It was the game when we had no supporters there, so I was watching it on a beam back to a screen at Main Road. And I remember a really crucial point in the game, Millwall getting a penalty, and the City players were protesting it, and you could see that it had been given for handball. When the replays came on, it was against Danny Teato, who had really clearly, I think, chested the ball. It had gone absolutely nowhere near his hand.
City were struggling that season and were eventually relegated, of course, and they drew 1-1 at Middlesbrough in February of that year. Although they might have won if Teato's goal hadn't been disallowed. Basically, he picked the ball up well inside his own half and bore down on goal, dribbled past a couple of Middlesbrough players and fired across the goalkeeper into the far corner. It was absolutely fantastic goal, but it was ruled out because Darren Huckabee was in an offside position in the middle.
And it was just an incredibly baffling decision at a really important time in the game. Keegan, I think, was punished after the game for saying something like, if 1 million referees watched that incident, then 1 million referees would say it wasn't a penalty. And somehow that still doesn't feel like a strong enough statement.
The thing is, Huckabee didn't touch the ball, he didn't stop a defender getting to it, he was just in an offside position when the ball flew into the net, yet he was deemed to be interfering with play and Marcus Rashford wasn't. make that make sense.
The ref had somehow seen Frontec pulling Cantona, but I've watched the highlights back and even the commentator thought that the whistle had gone for Cantona fouling Frontec. City manager Alan Ball said that it was a shocker. He said, "It changed the game. We had the tie taken away from us by the bizarre decision. Nobody in the crowd could believe it. There was bewilderment on every player's face." And even Lee Sharp, who ended up thinking he got the winner that day, said a couple of the lads said it was harsh in an important cup tie. And if it had happened to us, we'd have felt a little hard done by. Well, it happened to us, and we did feel a bit hard done by. And some of us still do, let me tell you.
Hi, this is Andy Morrison, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
So that was some of the worst decisions that City have suffered in recent years. We've changed guests now. I'm joined by Mike Minay from BBC Radio Manchester. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Dave.
We've just witnessed City, well, I was going to say take Spurs apart, but they didn't really, but they did as well at the same time. It was a weird game. We've just heard there some City fans remembering some bad decisions, all pegged to that Marcus Rashford goal. You were commentating on that game. Like, what was going through your mind? Because you've got to be professional on air, but equally, it's like it's just mad.
Well, fortunately, the way we work on match days at Radio Manchester in a derby is we do half a half each between me and the United commentator. So actually, conveniently, I got the Grealish goal and the good moment, and Bill got the Rashford goal. But I remember sitting next to Nigel Gleggo, the former City midfielder, and the second that it was clear VAR wasn't going to overturn that, he lost it, like almost into a sulk. He was. You could just see the rage, and that's a former player knowing the decision that's been made.
A massive injustice has just happened, yeah.
Exactly what he thought. And I think it's difficult. By the letter of the law, yes, he probably wasn't offside, but it's the grey matter of what is and what isn't interfering. And I think I've probably spoke to a handful of former players in the last 5-6 days with the same touch on the offside decision or not offside decision, and the same answer comes back, it was offside.
Yeah.
So I think from there, I spoke to Nader Manua and he said, stick a player in the VAR room, won't make a difference. You need a former player in with IFAB and get them to hammer home the point of what it's all about and look at decisions like this and clear up that matter. And that might force the rule change because the former players have been in that situation. But the sense of injustice was evident in Nigel Gleggo, and I sat there watching it. I couldn't believe it myself that it hadn't been given. I think I spoke to Bruno Fernandes after the game. He even admitted that they were slightly fortunate with the decision. And I think if the player's saying that on the winning team that's benefited from that decision, probably shows you. Shows you just how grey the area is.
Yeah, well, on the VAR, there's been a lot of discussion about why Rashford wasn't interfering according to the VAR. To clear it all up, I've spoken to Dale Johnson from ESPN. He's there. We call him the VAR czar because he knows everything about that. Here's him explaining to me why the VAR didn't advise an overturn.
Yeah, so in terms of the match itself, it's your usual process as we're seeing in a VAR league in terms of a player runs through and goal. He's in an offside position and the assistant, Darren Cam, he doesn't raise his flag until the end of the attacking phase, whether that results in a goal or results in a corner or results in the end of the play breaking down, for instance. And so as soon as the goal is scored by Fernandes, he raises his flag for the offside decision. And when you get to that point, he's basically telling the referee that he feels there's an offside. But because this is a subjective decision, that is still in the referee's control as the man who runs the match to make his own decision on that outcome. And he's decided that from the view he had in a direct line to play, that there's been no interference with an opponent by Marcus Rashford. And so he has decided that the goal should stand. Now, once that has happened, the VAR, in this case, Michael Oliver, the only way he can intervene is if there has been a clear error in law. Now, we may think personally or collectively that this shouldn't be a goal, but Michael Oliver can only look at it in the realms of the law. And if he can't find a really clear reason why it should be disallowed, then he has to go with the decision of the on-field officials, which was to give the goal.
Yeah, now it's interesting the kind of the wording of that, because I mean the way you say there that if he can't find a reason that Rashford is interfering, what you mean by that is not does Michael Oliver think that Rashford is interfering, because he might well think that he is interfering, but because Stuart Atwell's seen everything and made a judgment call based on what he's on basically what the monitor is also showing, that Stuart Atwell isn't going to change his mind.
Yeah, and that's the same with any decision, whether it be a foul for a penalty, for a handball. At the end of the day, it's the decision of the referee on the pitch at the time which carries most of the weight. And there will often be times when a referee in the VAR room will think to himself, well, I think that might be a penalty, but actually I can see why the referee has given it. And when you've got that situation, then the decision is going to stay on the field. There's got to be a really clear reason why the referee's got it wrong. And certainly when it comes to subjective offside decisions, there are very few times that the VAR gets involved in overrules. And we saw this at the World Cup as well. There was a goal in a Netherlands game, I think it was against Ecuador, where it was disallowed on the field for offside. And really, there wasn't an offside offence in there, but the VAR couldn't say subjectively they were wrong, so the goal stayed disallowed.
Yeah, the just on, in terms of the laws that that kind of govern offside, what is it that Marcus Rashford might have broken that Stuart Atwell has decided that he hasn't?
Yeah, so one thing you need to be clear is it's semantics really, but Marcus Rashford can't be interfering with play, because interfering with play that applies exclusively to touching the ball, and if you touch the ball, it's an absolute offence. It's offside, so you can only be offside if you interfere with an opponent. Now, one of the clauses for that is being in a player's line of vision. Now that actually applies to something like someone being in front of a goalkeeper on a shot, so that doesn't really apply here. The other is challenging an opponent for the ball. That doesn't really apply here because Marcus Rashford is just running forward. And the other thing is clearly attempting to play a ball. Now, whereas Marcus Rashford slows down and some people will feel he fainted to shoot, etc., he doesn't actually do anything that falls into attempting to play a ball. And another thing that's really important for this decision is that Akanji, for instance, is never actually within playing distance of the ball. Now, playing distance of the ball is specifically defined as being able to touch the ball if you stretch your leg. So you can't be 2 yards behind a striker. You can't be just chasing a player. You've got to be in a position where you could physically play the ball. So in that front, that's another situation where the VAR's got a problem. So the only area that Michael Oliver really has is in terms of Marcus Rashford making that slowing down movement just before he gets to the ball, and whether you feel that has a influence on Edison and his position on the pitch, and whether he thinks he would have come out quicker or made a different decision to prevent the goal being scored. So that is the only area of law that Michael Oliver could say Stuart Atwell made the wrong call, but it is a very subjective area in what you may decide is an offence. But I do agree, and I think that in terms of the spirit in the of the game and in what fans generally would expect, that the offside flag is a better outcome.
Yeah, I mean, my acid test for all of this sort of stuff is, you know, if the other decision had been made, would it be a talking point? And I guess we probably wouldn't be spending 5-10 minutes on a podcast discussing it had the goal just been disallowed, you know what I mean?
That's exactly what I said. Like, if this goal is disallowed, a few people might say, oh, well, it's a bit close. But absolutely nobody would consider it was a controversy for the goal not to stand. I mean, we see similar incidents where a striker may put his arms up or run towards the ball and decide not to run towards the ball. So there are instances where we've seen this type of goal, but perhaps not quite as obvious in this situation where Marcus Rashford did run directly towards the ball. So I think Manchester City are extremely lucky to concede the goal.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter Trusted Pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter Trusted Pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
That was ESPN's Dale Johnson. Mike, do you think the VAR should be able to in this situation? Because basically what they've done is they've ruled that the referee's seen it all in its entirety. There's nothing else they can show that will change what the referee's seen. So in theory, he should come to the same decision.
Yeah, so the way it was explained to me was linesman flags for offside, referees overruled him and said Rashford didn't touch the ball. By the letter of the law, that is not offside. VAR then has to prove that it's a clear and obvious error against the on-field decision. On-field decision's goal. Can they prove it's clear and obvious? No. I want to like VAR. I really do. And I just, it's at times like that. There are times when the referees come over to the monitor, you think, why are you going over to the monitor? There are times they rightly call to the monitor, you think, what a good decision. I just don't get that Rashford offside and where VAR and what it tried to prove. Because at first, we saw the flag, we didn't see the referee overturn the decision, and we thought, oh, the VAR's got to prove it was a goal.
Yeah.
It turns out it wasn't. It was proving it's got to prove it wasn't. All very complicated. And I think this doesn't help any of the VAR matter.
Yeah. Ultimately, City lost the game. To be honest with you, I can't blame them for losing their heads in that moment because it is such a howler that's been dropped. Did it remind you of Madrid? Did it remind you of that, like, when the bad moments happen, you know, things fall apart? We saw it again tonight against Spurs. Mm. You know, they went 1-0 down. They should have got to the break at 1-0. And then suddenly it's 2-0 and they've got a mountain to climb.
Yeah, tonight a little bit different. I don't think they lost their heads tonight. I think it was a freak goal, really. Edison parries it. Could have gone anywhere. But Old Trafford changed on Saturday, a bit like the Bernabeu changed. I was there that night in Madrid. And I think knowing also Real Madrid's history last year, as soon as they got one, you feared what might happen again.
Don't get that from United, though.
You don't, but Old Trafford did change. When that goal went in and VAR ruled it and the referee points back to the centre spot, the place changed. It was a very quiet Old Trafford till that point. Suddenly, off the scale. And City could have... Yeah, it's difficult. And it was 4 minutes between the goal. You think it's not like Benzema in that... Rodrigo in that case. There were two goals in 2 minutes and it flew at City. There was time in between to reset, readjust. So I'm not sure whether I compare it to Madrid in that sense, but the comparisons quickly came to me on Twitter that it was Madrid through people messaging. So there is...
Is that a problem?
Clearly what we're hearing from Pep Guardiola in the last 2 weeks, what we heard from Ilkay Gundogan, there is an issue at the minute somewhere. And I don't think anyone can actually put their finger on it.
It's a bit abstract, isn't it? That's the problem, yeah.
Because what you saw against Spurs in the second half was City. It was City that we've watched for 6 years under Pep Guardiola. Relentless, ruthless, quick, attacking, free-flowing, fluid football. It was beautiful. And you knew, really, when Alvarez got one and certainly when Haaland got the second, that City were going to win the game. Bit like Villa on the final day. If you want the comparisons, it's Villa on the final day. City go 2-0 down. They get one back, you think, all right, 2-2.
It's on now. Yeah.
Yeah. And then as soon as they got the second, you knew. There was only one team winning the game at that point. But something's not right. And I don't know what it is. Is it the Haaland factor? They are learning to play a different way and that actually upsets the whole team. Is Pep picking the right team? On paper, it was questioned again before Spurs. He didn't change anything at half time. That same team won the game. So it's really difficult to say what's up at the minute. And this, bar what, who? Alvarez and Haaland? This team won the title last year. They know, and the season before, and they know what it's like to come from points down against Liverpool and recover it. So they have the mentality. I think it's really hard to question the mentality. We know that City, under pressure, can fold Madrid, United, but
Under pressure, they don't as well. Maybe it all means nothing. It's just nothing.
There's a nice equilibrium and everything's fine. I think it's really difficult. But we know something's not right. I think it's more to do with the build-up play myself. I think it is that Haaland factor, but City are so much better with Haaland that it's not a question to say take him out of the team. Again, it was there tonight with the equaliser. So something's not right. I think Pep's a little bit extreme by saying we're far, far, far from being competitive.
But they're learning.
But it needs to click. And you know what? A win against Spurs, win against Wolves, and beat Arsenal in the FA Cup, I think City are back.
Yeah, season's back on track, isn't it? Well, let's have a look ahead to that Wolves game now. It's Wolves next for City. So we're going to start by hearing from Matt Cooper from Talking Wolves. I've been speaking to him to find out more about their season so far, starting with their decent form following the World Cup break.
Yeah, I think that's... But I'll say mostly, I think all down to the appointment of Julen Lopetegui, our new manager. And I think if the World Cup hadn't have come at the time it did at the end of the season, I think we may already be cut adrift, because before the World Cup break, we were absolutely awful under Bruno Lage, who in hindsight probably should have gone at the end of last season. I think the end of last season saved him from getting the sack. They spent over 100 million in the summer, and you could just tell that something wasn't quite right. But thankfully, the club have acted, even though it took them quite a while to bring Lopetegui in. And I don't think that's for any fault of their own, more so because his father was quite ill and he didn't want to take the job. But they finally got the man. It's not the first time Wolves have tried to get him in. They tried to get him in just before Nuno's reign, but he took the Spain job instead, which is fair enough. So he's come in and he looks like he's instilled a bit of belief and confidence into our players, which I think has been the biggest problem for us, because, you know, on paper there's quite a few good players in the team, and I don't like the adage of too good to go down, but I think the squad is, but it's just about instilling that belief, but also fitness. The players weren't fit, and Lopetegui even said that himself. So it just astounds me still that players can't be fit, or a manager can't get players to be fit. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah, what's he doing that's different? Because I mean, obviously there's been a slight change of style, has there?
Yeah, there has. For one, he's playing Mateus Nunes in his actual position, which is in a double pivot in midfield. But before Bruno Lage and Steve Davis, who was the interim manager, playing him as like a number 10, which it's just not his position. He's very good at getting the ball from deep and driving, and actually he's actually looking like a £40 million player now. But I don't know what it is. I think that the fullbacks are a lot closer to the centre backs because they need protection, because they've been fairly shaky. But we've almost been quite fluid in games. You may see us, and it may be different at the Etihad, we might go 9 at the back, and I wouldn't blame him.
It's worked for you before, yeah.
I know. We got a bit of stick about how we've approached games, but you know, in the past, it's especially on a couple of occasions, it's worked. It's worked quite well. But again, that was under Nuno, where I felt at that particular time of his tenure, I thought we could beat anyone, and I think that showed. But yeah, we've been really fluid in terms of formations. We've played a 4-2-3-1, we played a 4-4-2, which I still think's our we look most dangerous in, but we've also played a 5 at the back, which, ridiculous as it sounds, we look even worse defensively with a 5. we have been really fluid, and you know, I don't think Lopetegui still knows his best team, which is fair enough, because I certainly don't, so I'd imagine he doesn't.
Yeah, just looking at recent results as well. I mean, Boxing Day win at Goodison. I saw the end of that game, and that was a real good kind of hard fought victory in the end. Obviously, recently beat West Ham as well. These are the sorts of games that you'll have been looking at, thinking we need to win these games, and you have done. So like, what's the mood around the place at the moment?
I think the mood is a little bit more optimistic. I don't think fans think that we're completely out of it. And you know, they've spent money already in January, signed Mateus Cunha, they've signed Pablo Sarabia, so Mario Lemina, and I think they'll go and get another centre-forward in the centre-half, probably Craig Dawson from West Ham. And people might think, well, would you want to go and get Craig Dawson? He's washed. But what we'd really need is Premier League experience, and that's why they brought Lemina in as well. And just a few leaders on the pitch, because they lost a lot of leaders last season in the likes of Connor Cody, obviously went to Everton, which I still don't I don't hate the decision to let him leave because we switched to a back four, which historically has not been great in. Romain Saïssou, us at Talking Wolves, did an interview with a few months ago, if anyone's interested in that. He told all about the club, which is very insightful, and I couldn't believe half that he said. John Ruddy as well, big character. So they're looking now to bring in more players. But with that in mind, I think that fans are a little bit more optimistic. But we're not out of the woods yet. And it's so tight at the bottom. We had a great result against West Ham on Saturday. And as you mentioned, the Everton game, we've got to be beating teams in and around us. But, you know, we go to Man City on Sunday, who probably, I don't think you'll give us a good hiding, but I think obviously you'll beat us. And, you know, it only takes a couple of results elsewhere to go against us, and we're back in the bottom three. So it's so tight, but a lot more optimistic than we were about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I was going to say, sitting in 16th as it stands, but I mean, there's 2 points between 14th and the bottom. So it's just like, I've never seen it this tight for a long time. And I guess that must make you nervous in the end.
Yeah, it does. It really does. I really struggled to watch the last 10 minutes of our games. Just from a nerves point of view, the West Ham game on Saturday. I don't normally leave early, but I left on 91 minutes because I said to my brother, I feel sick. I physically cannot watch this because I knew the magnitude of the game and obviously leading the game. We've been very poor in recent times towards the last 15, 20 minutes of the game, which probably coincides with them not being fit, which they seem to have rectified. But yeah, it still makes me very nervous. But I think we'll have enough. If you look at some of the players we've got, the likes of Neves as well, who's for me still one of the best midfielders in the league. He's, you know, you need players like that. And as long as a few of us start to turn a corner in terms of the form, the likes of Pedenza's got, I think, 3 in his last 4, which we don't have many proven goal scorers. And everyone always says you need to go and get, you know, a 20-goal a season centre forward, but they don't exist. And if they do exist, they play for Man City. So yeah. They just don't. You almost have your wide players, your inside forwards who chip in with 7 or 8, and you might get a centre forward who gets you 10 or 11. I don't think that the days of a 20-goal a season league striker exist unless you've got someone like Haaland who's a freaking nature, or a team that creates a glut of chances, which Wolves don't.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at kind of the wider picture for this game, because obviously, you say there about how City have a habit of putting teams to the sword sometimes. Mm-hmm. If you look at City's recent form and go, actually, they're not in the best of moments right now, and you know we've got our tails up a little bit. There could be something to be had here.
Yeah, and we discussed this on our podcast in the week. Like, we're under no illusions that we're going to go to the Etihad and it's going to be a walk in the park. But quite often we've seen teams, and we've done it as well, where we almost just sit back and have our bellies tickled by City because they're scared to attack. But then you look at the likes of Southampton most recently, who have attacked you and had a go. And, you know, there's both in the same league. There's going to be, we are going to get chances. So I'd like us to go there and just have a go. But like I said, a wounded animal is a dangerous animal, and I think you'll be absolutely fine against us on Sunday. But I just want us to, you know, look at that Southampton game as a blueprint. Yes, it might be, you know, an anomaly, but just have a go because you never know what might happen.
Yeah, what do you think Lopetegui will do? You said kind of stick 9 at the back before. Are you expecting more the back 5 sort of setup?
I hope not. We switched to a back 5 for 20 minutes against Liverpool last night, and we looked even worse, even more shaky defensively. Not quite sure how that works. I think it's more so because we lose the extra man in midfield, and it just doesn't work. So I expect us to go with the 4-2-3-1 and just, you know, change a few responsibilities. The likes of Wang or Pedenza may need to come and track back a lot more and help out those fullbacks. But what we have seen Lopetegui do, and I think he's been cited to say this in previous roles, he doesn't look at substitutes as substitutes. He looks at them as game changers, and his substitutes have really affected games most recently. So we may start 55 minutes with players who, okay, might not have the most flair or the most attacking intent, but are real grafters. And then for the last half an hour, 35 minutes, it brings on the like of Traore, Cunha, Pedenza, and it's worked really well because they have changed the game. They give you a bit more dynamism, a bit more attacking impetus. So I'd imagine it's going to go like that if we can try and keep it tight, but it's, you know, it's all ifs and buts, isn't it, against City?
Yeah, you mentioned Pedence. He seems to keep getting on the score sheet recently. Is he your man in form?
In terms of goal getting, yeah, it frustrates the life out of me. And I think I can speak for most fans on that, because I always say he does the simple things poorly and the really hard things extremely easily. It's just, it's frustrating. But when it comes off, I mean, there was an opportunity on Saturday against West Ham where the ball had got cut back to him on the edge of the area. And instead of having a shot, he dummied. And there was no one behind him. And I was so irate, thinking, why has he done that? And then 15 minutes later, a ball comes from on the edge of the area, like first time finish, he smashes it bottom corner. I'm like, it's so frustrating. But I think, yeah, he's probably our danger man in terms of creating chances. He's always on for a pass as well. So yeah, I think the goal threat would come from him. He's, Cunha's looks a good player as well, but I think he needs someone to play off, whether that's a Costa or a Diego Costa or a Jimenez. He looks like he could be a real good piece of business. I'm not sure about the fee. Of course, George Mendes involved with that one, so make your own minds up about that. But yeah, I think Pedence, who looks quite a similar player to Sarabia, who just signed, but I don't expect Sarabia to feature much.
Yeah, I was going to ask if he was available for this one. It's I'm sure he signed in time, but it's whether he's going to be fit and ready to go, I guess.
Yeah, he's registered in time. I think what we'll see is similar to what we saw with Lamina at the weekend, who when he came on played really well, just you know, shored up the midfield. We might see him for 25 minutes, 20 minutes, depending on how the game's going. If he's still chasing the game, still in it, you might see him a little bit earlier. But yeah, I think we'll see him in some capacity, but in how much, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, well, Matt, we've got the charity bet coming up a bit later on in the show. I like to not have to have any responsibility whatsoever, so I give my prediction over to the guests. What's your score prediction for the game?
Oh, I always don't like backing against my club, but if it's a charity bet, then I feel like I'm going to have to. I'm going to go 3-0 Man City.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, but don't worry, it'll be over soon.
That was Matt Cooper from Talking Wolves, now joined by the Mail's Jack Gawn. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Not too bad, not
it's
too bad.
It's a very lovely setting to do this little segment of the podcast, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was either here or outside the gents.
No, so a very, very small corridor of the Etihad Stadium.
Indeed. Now, we've just seen City play Spurs. Wolves next. What does a performance like tonight do for the game against Wolves now?
Well, I would probably go exactly the same, play with the same sort of zeal that they did tonight. But the piece I've written tonight is about how he doesn't really want to play like that. He wants to play with control and doesn't want them to give the ball away and
was a bit chaotic at times.
Concede on the counter attack. Yeah, and he doesn't like that, so he won't want them to play like that on Sunday. But I think genuinely think that's the best way of them to get out of the funk, that they've got so many good attacking players that they make these games into a bit more of a basketball game and just trust themselves to outscore teams.
Yeah,
because they've got the best striker in the world, arguably the best midfielder in the world in De Bruyne when he recaptures his form.
Mahrez is on form right now.
Mahrez is playing really well. Grealish is playing really well. It's just sometimes you just go for it. Just stop worrying about the opposition and sort of counter attacks and things like that.
Think he was worrying about Spurs tonight in that sense?
Yeah, well, he always worries about Spurs and he always worries about Wolves as well on the counter attack. You remember Traore a few years ago when he
I cannot forget about that moment.
Lubed himself up and slipped through on the counter attack. But it's just that he worries about every team and what they can do, because every team plays exactly the same way, don't they? I mean, tonight Spurs played a little bit higher than I was expecting them to, which allowed Haaland in behind a couple of times and then some others as well. But yeah, I just want, I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit basic about it, but I just like, you got some bloody brilliant players.
Just let them play.
Just let them play. Just go, yeah.
Yeah. We've had Yadar opinions earlier on. We've got basic bitch really? Opinions now. Is this the mood?
I don't know whether actually mine is like, get it wide and get it in, so that might be a bit of your dad as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Get a dollop of city nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast.
You mentioned Wolves have regularly given City troubles. Earlier this season, I thought earlier this season was a bit of a weird game against Wolves. City came out 3-0 winners, but I didn't really see it as a 3-0 sort of game. What are you expecting this weekend?
Well, I mean, speaking to the game at Molineux, sort of in keeping with all the other victory, well, the majority of victories they've had this season, where I don't think they've played well all year, really. And he's obviously said all that tonight and gone off on one about a lack of passion and desire, and maybe there's a bit of complacency having won four or five league titles. What do I expect on Sunday? Absolutely no idea.
But, so hard to read,
yeah. But at the moment, they're impossible to read, because even that Chelsea game the other week was quite interesting, the one that they won 4-0, where I didn't think as a team they actually played that well, but I thought they played with the right idea.
Yeah.
Whereas in times tonight, I thought they married that up. They played with the right idea, but also played quite well as well. But see, I actually thought they did pretty well in the first half.
Yeah, a couple of people said that.
I said at half time, I was like, I can't believe they're losing this game 2-0. It's like a Champions League quarter final from 5 years ago, isn't it? Basically, but you just don't know what you're gonna get. I mean, people were saying that they sort of managed the game at United on Saturday quite well, and sort of didn't really agree with that either. They didn't think they did enough to. City 3 years ago would have gone and got a second goal and killed it off. So yeah. You just have no idea. But for a neutral, which I am, it makes it really interesting.
One of the games of the season tonight, and it's what you get, I guess, when City have the shackles off. Maybe when they got the shackles off again with backs against the wall, they needed to pull something out, and you get a game like that.
I think that was it. I think that's the idea tonight. It was like, nothing else is, you know, plan A is not working, so let's go to plan B, but maybe plan B should be plan A.
Yeah. Final word for a look ahead to Wolves. Foden and De Bruyne, did they come back in?
I would always have Phil Foden in the team, but I don't know how you get him in after the performances of the players that would play in a similar position tonight. You've got to play Mahrez, obviously. I think you've got to play Grealish.
I thought Grealish played well.
Grealish was superb, and I thought there was a really nice moment in the first half when he made that tackle, and the ground were like up, and which I thought was it was a good moment that, and he was very direct. De Bruyne,
he's had a bit of a funk lately, and I wonder if just one game is enough. One game rest is enough to kind of slowly build him out of it.
Yeah, I would probably play De Bruyne over Gundogan on Sunday, just because quite a quick turnaround, and Gundogan struggles with his back, doesn't he, as we know. So
very involved tonight as
well. I thought that was Gundogan's best game of the season tonight, actually, I thought. Probably would play De Bruyne, but I don't see how Foden gets in, because then you probably play Alvarez again. Because Alvarez just he's busy, isn't he? Just sort of makes stuff happen and gets in the way of defenders and loiters in places that they've not expected him to. That's like that amazing goal he scored in the World Cup. It's not a fantastic run. It's just pure perseverance and ball bobbling off knee and like him just bowling
right time.
Yeah. And that's sometimes that's what they need.
Yeah. Well, score prediction. We've got the charity bet coming up. What are you going to go for?
Well, that's difficult because if they play like tonight, it could be anything. 5-0 Sunday.
Excellent. I look forward to City's 5-0 win and your win on the charity bet. You mentioned Guardiola. I'm now going to splice in his post-match press conference from the Spurs game because it's a corker and you all need to hear this. So this is what he said.
We have the problem that we have four Premier League in 5 years and Arsenal has 2 decades without Premier League. It did something. Seb Gabriel and Alex Zinchenko didn't win never Premier League. In every game, every ball, not every game, every ball, every action, every corner, every do it is there. We miss it. We don't have it. Rico Lewis conceded 4 fouls. Who defend him? I know it's not yellow card because 80 years old. And 80 years old, you know, it's not. You know that the penalty is not given, you know, with 3-2. Oh, it's okay. But who defend Rico? No one. Nothing will react. And do you think I said something special? Change players in the halftime or say that? I know it would happen, yeah, because no play Joao or don't play Kyle or don't play Jaime or don't play Bernardo or Kevin or whatever with that decision. It's not about that. With them, it's the same. So play bad? No. We always play good. We have the quality that we have, we do it. But it is something, it's not about that. It's about that we don't have it. Right now, we don't have it. It comes from the success we had in the past. We have to admit it, we had a lot of success. People say, no, it's not a success because we don't win the Champions League. Bullshit. We won a lot. In this country, two bags. And the way we played, the consistency against this Liverpool. What a success. That is normal. But we have to look ourselves. It's not enough. He said, yeah, it's okay. No, come on. I said to Erling, runners. You cannot drop because runners. One runner in the halftime. One. Your quality is there. That's why you bought it. I want to help you. Qualities go there. One. I want more. I score 24 goals. I want to score 50. I want more. For everyone. And put it, it's not about perform well or bad. There's no complaining and we can do better. We'll do better. Tell me, Nathan. Kulusevski. What a player. Salah in a Carabao Cup. The 10 duels, win nine. It's not in highlights. But with Nathan right now, we cannot play good. Rico Lewis, yeah, 80 years old, why don't play this one, the other one? Rico, play. Look the game against Carabao Cup Chelsea. Carabao Cup against Liverpool. In Leeds, the team more aggressive in the Premier League. They don't give you 2 seconds to have free. There, smaller spaces, pa. Chelsea, second half, arrive after 1 minute, he changed the game. Why? Because I want to live in this job in world. I want to have a better contract. I want to win Premier League. I never won, and that Julian, I will run. That is what to come back. Everyone, because we need everyone. And that we don't today, not today. And play good, yes, but we don't have it. And football is not about just play good or bad or good skills. Something we have to be. Inside all of us. The players don't realize they want it. They train really good, they want it, but there is something that is here in the clouds. Like you cannot express in a million details that no have it. I see Arsenal games and they do everything good. That's why they are in front and they deserve it. I said yesterday, for 14 years I won 11 leagues, Premier Leagues, 11. So it's a lot. Huh? It means every day and see things that you cannot see because you are not there. And I see it. And you have to something for the front. And it's not one single player. Everyone is there. It's not about because I will see, oh, these 11 players, that doesn't happen. For me, it will be easy. I play all the time these 11 players. But it's everyone. As much as we realize it, we'll come back. Our fans have to push us, have to demand more, have to shout, have to, come on, guys, I know how good you are. Show us again. I want a reaction for all the club, all organization, not just the players, the staff and everyone. We're a Happy Flowers team. Happy Flowers organization. Ah, it's good. No, I don't want to be a Happy Flower.
I want to beat Arsenal. No way, you know? But if we play in that way, Arsenal will destroy us. Will beat us.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
So that was Pep Guardiola speaking to the press after the game with Spurs. I brought back Sam Lee from The Athletic. We're also joined by Simon Bakowski from the Manchester Evening News. Simon, we'll come to you in a second, because Sam, we were chatting about Guardiola, what he might say, and then he said that.
Yeah, well, I do stand by it, but I thought there was loads of good stuff they showed tonight that showed they were like really brave, and I was even like justifying it. I'd even started writing, like, even if they conceded an equaliser or whatever, I thought there was loads of stuff there
you'd
be really positive about. Get, you know, never use that Gundogan quote again, don't worry about it, you know. So I stand by that. I was actually tempted to say that there was no point because it was clear he didn't. I was actually tempted to say, did you not actually think there was loads of really good stuff they did tonight? But like 10 minutes in the press conference, like picking up on what everyone saw on Sky, just tearing everyone to pieces.
Yeah. Was it performative, Simon, do you think? Does he actually believe that, or is it a message to his players that, like, if you piss around much more this season, we ain't winning it?
Yeah, it's both. I think most Pep Guardiola press conferences are performative, but at the same time, that, what we've just seen, feels like pretty pure Pep performative. Without being privy to the earlier conversation, it feels like the press conference, what he was saying, it was like nothing to do with the performance or bits of the performance.
They were good, didn't
they? Yeah.
He kept reiterating that they were good.
Yeah. It's just something else, something different, and it's completely unprecedented, really, for his 7 years at City. Clearly, he wants change, and that's why you've seen like the likes of Rico Lewis stick around the team. He praised Nathan Ake for doing the basic things right, basically, and for being hungry. And he said, you know, it's not about Cancelo or De Bruyne or Bernardo being on the bench, because it would have been the same with them on the pitch. So it's clearly something that he feels is not right, whoever plays.
It's an abstract thing, isn't it? I mean, this is the thing. It's like he kept mentioning in the clouds.
Well, one thing he said, yeah, there's just something in the clouds, and that was around the time he was saying, look, you don't see these details, but I see them. And he said there's a million details, and when he sees the Arsenal game, they do everything right. And it's interesting because he mentioned complaining on the TV, didn't he?
Yeah.
And Jack asked him, well, what did you mean? And then he kind of didn't get it, and then he said, well, what did you mean? And then he didn't really address it again.
Yeah.
But it's obviously, he said, I don't know, because you think you see that hunger and the anger or whatever, when the Etihad's angry and the players are as well.
Yeah,
and you think, okay, something's brewing, this is quite special.
Yeah.
And it's sort of harnessed. That's another way I could have written the article, really, because that was what it was. Like, the fans were pissed off, and the players were pissed off, but he was talking about complaining. But what I kind of read into that was, because you know he's always saying, you know, if you just run these 2 yards, and if you, then it makes all the difference, and if you don't, then everything falls apart. It was kind of, I think he was kind of saying, if all of a sudden now they're saying, oh, do I have to do this, do I have to do that, and it's just, there's obviously something in training, it's just the level of
hunger
there.
But then
again, I still don't understand how you can go from that to do this tonight. But you said they were lucky. It's like, you can't.
Yeah.
Look, that, I mean, they were lucky in the sense that maybe there was, you know, the Rico Lewis block that went onto the post and that kind of thing. But you can't.
As he said, they've still got loads of quality players, haven't they?
Yeah.
But I mean,
but the attitude was there.
But also, very interestingly, like he said, it's not the team. He said the whole organisation.
Yeah.
Happy Flowers organisation.
Yeah. So I don't want Happy Flowers. I don't want to be a Happy Flower. I want to win the Premier League.
You're like, who else? Who else is not giving him what he wants? Monday to Friday, the chefs. Yeah. Like, laying off on his eggs, or I don't know.
I don't know, maybe it's that, you know, it's that Money League thing today and they got the most income. Maybe he's overheard a meeting or some kind of meeting where City are like,
some kind of celebration.
The numbers around or whatever, and he's just like, right, fuck all of this.
Yeah.
Everything just needs to, we need to focus, we need to stop patting ourselves on the back, because it doesn't matter how much money we're bringing in. Come down to training session, these players aren't trying.
They're not pulling the weight, but I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not privy to that.
He's not left much to the imagination of it. Yeah.
No, but I mean, they have been wildly inconsistent.
That's one thing we did today at the start. I was like, you never actually know. Maybe they go and pull something else that's different against Wolves and they lose, and we're talking about inconsistency again.
Yeah, and you know, Guardiola has a habit of sort of making himself always right and always soothsayer, but you know, he said he could see the Southampton game coming at the start of the season. So
yeah, it took us 6 months to come.
But you know, so maybe he thinks there's something around the corner that we
that we're not expecting. Yeah. And that's kind of, there's Wolves on the horizon.
Well, he must do. That's why he's done this.
But because as well, because I'd been in the mix zone tonight and then came in and saw Guardiola's coated off the fans as well. And I kind of assumed he'd had a go at him for booing. But, I mean, I wanted to ask in the press conference, but
yeah.
I didn't get time. But from the sounds of it, like, he preferred the booing to the silence. He don't want him to just sit there and be like, yeah, entertain us.
Yeah, like a Real Madrid kind of
thing. Yeah, yeah, like, he'd... Obviously, you don't want to be booed, but he wants noise. He wants something from the fans, just like he does from the players.
Yeah. I thought about asking him as well, but then I was like, if the audio of this comes out, and the one thing I've asked about is, can you slag the fans off the floor? But also, I wanted to understand, like, I asked him, like, why now? Like, why are you telling us this?
Yeah.
But it's probably because he probably thinks, I thought we'd find those, but he could easily think, okay, we've just won that. All the back pages, all of our articles are going to be, God City are great. The players are going to believe that. Yeah. They're going to have the same problems as before.
And then Wolves comes along. Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's not just we're talking about it. And this would be the first thing on Sky Sports News tomorrow, which I think he always sees when he's walking through City. Everyone's going to be talking about this. When you're talking about City's game at the weekend, everyone's going to be like, are the players up to it? There's nowhere to hide now. He's kind of taken that approach with, like, Phillips, hasn't he?
Yeah.
With Mahrez after the Chelsea game, he was like, you know, he's great now, but earlier in the season,
he's completely different. He's on holiday with the line,
wasn't he? Yeah, yeah. And he's taken that line with a few players, but obviously now it's just gone right, the lot of them. And this is the thing, that Gundogan quote had the potential to, like, be used all season. Yeah. Or, you know, even if they got over it tonight, you'd go back to it. I'm thinking, I'm writing at the end of the season, this is a part of it. But you don't really get the, you know, we've got some details of behind the scenes, what's going on, hopefully we can use later on, blah, blah, blah. But it's kind of intangible. But then it could go away. But Pep's like, this is now the whole season now.
Yeah.
This isn't just, oh, Ilkay Gundogan said that in January. Which may, this is just the biggest thing. And not just this season, but obviously, look, what they've done.
Mm.
Can't be kind of overshadowed or topped or diminished or whatever. But this is like a kind of, not a watershed moment, it's just such a massive moment in his time at City, isn't it? He's just like, right, kind of just stripping it all down and starting again.
And he was, I mean,
as much as you can.
Because part of it, Simon, as well, was like, he wasn't down on the performance. He wasn't down on kind of how they played.
No. And, you know, and also he made a point as well of pointing out how good they have been and how amazing the team have been and saying they haven't got as much credit as they should have done for the wins they've had. But he just wants to hammer home that he wants more. And, you know, he picked on Haaland, which he almost... I can't remember him criticising Haaland before, but he basically said he didn't make the runs I want. I told him to make. I told him to make those runs and he didn't make them. And it's like, if you're going after Haaland, like...
Yeah, you think Haaland will come in with that enthusiasm? All right, come on, let's win the Premier League. Also... Haaland must not know whether he's coming or going, because he's obviously spent 6 months being told to drop deep and link up play.
Yeah,
and now he's running behind. One of the things that was maybe accurate that we talked about earlier on was the balls in behind. Funnily enough, we both picked up that one
where
opportunity where they did it, but that was obviously the one that he mentioned.
But I mean, the other thing in play here is Guardiola loves control on the pitch. He loves it off it, and this is normally the time of the season, November to March, between the international breaks, where City put together these winning runs. They've not had that this year because of the World Cup. It's been completely out of Pep's hands. And, I mean, he flat out denied it in a press conference the other day. But it's kind of, since the World Cup, the performances haven't been there.
Whether he's blaming the World Cup itself or whatever, it's just obvious. Just
the players coming back from it.
You wouldn't even need to follow his quotes or what we write or talk about whatever. Just look at the performances and loads of them are off it. You can't deny that.
Yeah. So it's kind of like his most perfect time of the year is now the worst, and he's trying to do something to get something out of it.
That's why I asked. I was like, look, and he said, I want a reaction.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was obvious, wasn't it? But it's like, give him the opportunity to say it.
Yeah.
Like, give him the opportunity to say, this is why I'm doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was just like, just mad. You see stuff coming through on, like, our work channels and Twitter and stuff. You're like, hold on, what's he saying?
Yeah.
And then he just comes in.
But like, also rare that, you know, you see TV quotes before the press conference, you say, oh, they'll be the best bits. And it's like, oh, no.
Hold
no.
my beer.
We've got the best seats, you know. We've both been in many press conferences. We've all been in many press conferences of Pep for the last 7 years, and that has to be up there, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what, I can't remember how I worded it, but I was just like, what? Because I'm always thinking, how am I going to word these questions? And I was like, why are you telling us this? Like, I was considering saying, this is obviously great for us, this is amazing. Yeah. But like, why has it come to this? And obviously that was what I was getting at. But why are you doing all this now? But it is obvious, isn't it? Like, everyone's going to be talking about this for the Wolves game, for every game.
Yeah.
From every game from now on, if they don't win it, people will say, oh, they didn't have the mentality. And then in the summer, because one of the first things he said was, I have to change the team or move the team.
Yeah.
And when he says move the team, he means make loads of transfers.
And it
perfect. Well, not bring loads in, get loads out.
It's perfect for him because it plays into like everyone's perception of him anyway. So everyone who sees him as like unhinged will do. Everyone who sees him as this master, charismatic guy, again.
Sees that.
You know, this could be the master stroke that saves his season.
Yeah. You mentioned the Wolves game coming up, Sam. I've let you fight amongst yourselves for the final prediction slot for that one. Simon's won. What are you going for?
I'm going for 2-0.
Who to?
Manchester City.
2-0 City win. We'll check the odds for that and the other charity bet predictions, and we'll stick the odds on Twitter. But for now, that's the end of this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks to all of my guests for today's show, and to my guest for the final part, Simon Bakowski.
Thank you.
And Sam Lee.
What a wild ride.
It was, wasn't it? Yes. We'll be back next week, so we'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Speaking of things that you don't remember happening, or that you didn't know had happened about that game, I was not at that game. I was watching at home. And when we got that corner, I jumped forward to the edge of my seat and stood on the TV remote and turned it off. And when I turned the TV on, they were celebrating. So obviously, I still sort of had the excitement of the last-minute equaliser, but without actually seeing it, which just sort of killed the vibe a little bit.
Oh, that's really tickled like, me, that.
Yeah, but like, I definitely watching it with my mum, and I can remember her being like, put it back on, what are you doing? And then I'm trying, but then you're in that sort of panic of like pressing all the wrong buttons because you know you're desperately scrambling,
but you press the on button as well, and the TV, it does that thing where it thinks about turning
exactly.
on, and then you exactly. press it again and it turns it off again, and you're like, no, I wanted to turn it on. So
turn it back on, and they were already celebrating. So a great sort of lost moment of not seeing that one. I'll tell you what's really nice though, it's great to hear that back and hear the excitement of the time. It was properly exciting at the time.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and join us again next time for another episode.